Welcome to On the Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have comedian Mike Mazzalotti. Mike is returning to the show. He and Billy Anderson came on a little over 7 years ago back in Salt Lake when they were touring with the Gateway Comedy Show. So thrilled to have Mike back on the podcast. Since then, we've all of us have actually moved out to Los Angeles. We were all kind of on the precipice of being able to make the big move out to L.A. Billy doing stuff with the Gateway Show, Mike doing stand-up. And of course, I mean, you guys know everything that I've been up to. So it was great to catch up with Mike. Over the last 7 years, so much has gone on. He opened a big hit comedy studio out here for stand-up shows every weeknight called Third Wheel Comedy that's out here in Los Angeles. He also recorded a dry bar comedy special and just released a book called Comedy is for Dummies. Mike is just so determined. I've loved watching his work ethic. He's such a great comic. His dry bar special is absolutely hilarious, and I really hope you guys check that out. We will have the links for all of that available at onthemicpodcast.com, so make sure you head over to the website. Be able to follow Mike, watch his dry bar special. Again, he's such a great comic, and I'm really excited to be able to have him back on the show and for you guys to find out everything he's been up to since he and Billy were on, a good 7 years ago. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. It was really fun to catch up with Mike. A lot of great episodes still to come coming up later on. We've got Josh Gillespie, that you guys may know from Muppet History, that's coming up on an upcoming episode. Very excited to have Joshua on the show. I wanted to actually bring him out for a live show at San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago and didn't realize he didn't live in Los Angeles and lived clear on the other side of the country. But I know Muppet History is something that everybody loves, whether it's on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Joshua does such a great job curating so many fun Muppet facts. And, you know, if you love the Muppets and the Jim Henson Company the way I do, it's a perfect page to follow. So stay tuned for that episode coming up. But again, thanks to Mike Mazzalotti for taking the time to come on the show. It was so great to catch up. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. We'll see you next week. It's great to have you back on, because I was looking back through when you and Billy came by my old place in Utah, and it was just about 7 years ago now.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it was that long, but yeah, it was just about 7 years ago that you guys came by. You were on the Gateway tour, going through Salt Lake at the time.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, and you and Billy didn't live out here yet. I think you were living in Seattle at the time, if I remember right. And
yeah, that tour's...
Yeah, we're getting ready to move out to Los Angeles. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that tour's what changed everything, because I was working at the Comedy Underground, managing. I was only 3 years into doing stand-up, but I was managing and had a good spot at the club, going up every night. It was hard to leave. And then Billy's like, hey, I'm going to go on the road for a month. I'd like you to come with me. Told me all the details about it. And it's like, oh, this is great. I can't say no to this. But then at the same time, it was like, well, I can't lose. You know, I have such a great job. I have such, a great opportunity. But then it just hit me I don't know. It's just kind of too comfortable. I've been doing this for almost a year. And I mean, I probably could have, stayed there and done whatever. But it just seemed like the adventure of going on the road for 30 days and doing stand up every night was more of the goal than managing at the comedy club. So then we went on the road, and then we met you. We did a bunch of great stuff, but then we went to LA right after that, and then everything luckily went great since then. But it was just that was kind of the beginning of the journey to come out here, was that whole trip.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a big gamble, like you said, that you took to really make that step. You leaving a secure job, and I know all of us hitting here at the same time probably all went through those same motions of fuck it, we got to figure this out now and make it work one way or another.
Yeah, man, it was it's kind of especially if you have something good, but you want something else, it's really hard. If people have a good job that pays well and it really holds you down, but it's not exactly where you want to be overall. I'm not saying just quit and do whatever, but it just makes it hard. The better your life is, it's actually harder to go after what you love, because it's fuck, am I going to give this all up for something that's a maybe? And then if your life sucks, it's like, well, it doesn't matter. Everything sucks. Let me go after this. So if you have any kind of, I see friends with good jobs that are I can't go on the road as much, or I can't do this as much. And I totally get it. It's just it make it's hard. You figure if you had a good life, it'd make it easier to do stuff, but sometimes it's like the opposite.
Yeah, no, it's very true, and it's I know when I moved, I had a good job at a big tech company, and even though I was only working part time so that I could do comedy and write stuff and podcast and film, it still was like, okay, this is all sense of like security, and like leaving like a nice big two bedroom apartment, and like when we moved out here, we moved into a studio apartment. I worked at a nice tech job too. Okay, I know I can drive Uber right when I move out there, and that'll. So yeah, it is like a matter of just taking that risk and going for like I like how you put it, like going for the maybe.
It's like, 'cause at the end of the day, it's like, at least it's what I think, you try to go big, you have one chance of going through this life, and as we get older, it starts hitting you even more, 'cause sometimes, like, I just turned 38, which is still, I'm still like relatively young. Like, for an athlete, I'm old, I'm done, I'm washed up, no shots. But it's just like, you think about, like, oh yeah, like when you're in your 20s or even like younger, that coming up, it's like there's so much time to get all this stuff done. And after, you start getting a little older, you realize it's like, all right, like I still have time, but I need to start putting those blocks in place. I'm done with the surveying the field and learning all that. And now let me get into the actually doing and like seeing what the knowledge I've accrued actually builds, because it is nice to not just jump into stuff, but at the same time, sometimes that's the best way to learn, is just to kind of go after it, because you're going to mess up. But then when you mess up, you figure out, okay, that didn't work, but now this, I know if I did this different, it will work. And so that's a little bit of I'm trying to be more mindful of, like, don't just let time pass by. Like, think about what you're doing with a purpose, and is what I'm doing today helping my future goal, or am I just kind of running in a circle for the next couple months and not really getting closer to the end goal,
Yeah, it's funny to find to see that transition in life too, when you are just kind of having the, I'm in my 20s, fuck it, like we're gonna have some fun, like even into your early 30s, and then yeah, as you hit the late 30s, it's like, what's a 401k? Do I need one of those? Like, should I be focused? Yeah, it's a very weird thing, and I mean, we're the same age, and so like going into this time in life, like it is weird to have to start looking at it, and it's like, yeah, we chose entertainment as a career, and now it's like, oh, but now it needs to be a lucrative career. Now I need to be thinking about, oh, how do I support myself? And it's I think one of the craziest things to think that we can do, but also the most rewarding and most fun thing that we get to do.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, when I do a stand-up show, especially, I mean, if I get a free hotel when I go on, I mean, I travel there, I pay for my flights, and they give me a free hotel, which should be a given. I still like walk in the room and it's like, this is crazy that me telling jokes is giving me a hotel for the night, when like, if I go on a regular vacation and a hotel, like I got to pay for it, and it costs this much money, and then you go there, it's if you can, you get a little bit, it's like this addiction will give you little tastes of what it could be, like what that perfect life could be. And you're like, I don't know, man, I feel like if I really work hard enough, I can get there. But it is, yeah, it's sometimes it does feel like it's not gonna happen, but then you don't want to think about that, because it's just like, no, it's happening little by little. And I feel like that, once you feel like it might not happen, I think that's a good thing, because that's when a lot of people quit. So it's like, all right, you're feeling that, now keep going. Now go twice as hard. Like, are you working as hard as you could be working for it to happen? No, then do more work. So as annoying as it is, that's like the answer I always hit myself with, is only work works. Like, if you, I'll be sitting in front of my computer, like, I need to put up more videos. Like, well, you're watching a YouTube video. Edit something right now. Like, it's especially with nowadays, if you're a comic, you need to be an editor, you need to be a producer, you need to be a pod, like, we got to be doing it all, and we got to be getting good at it all. So it's a lot,
Yeah, and I mean, with a lot of stand-ups, I have discovered so many more stand-ups than I probably ever would have going to, certain comedy clubs around because of people taking the advantage of social media and putting up those clips. And I mean, it's kind of funny to me because everyone for years is always like, don't record anything at a show. We don't want it. And now it's like, I need this recorded so I can put it up. And it's funny how that's changed, but actually changed for the better.
Yeah, in the beginning, it kind of annoyed me because I'm with you. Like, I was like on the old heads of like, well, I've been doing comedy for 10 years and this is what you're supposed to do. And you come up as a host, and then you go as a fee, and then like you do all this stuff. And then, but it's also like it's all up to these people that decide that you're ready or you're not ready. And then the more you do comedy and you start seeing these people, the turnover of them, it's like, well, who's the booker? What did they do before this? Oh, they ran a Chili's? Like, what? So my future is dependent on this person that has no idea. Like, it's so bonkers sometimes. So I do like the fact that we are able to do it independently. If you work hard and you start putting your stuff out, like, you can pop yourself. And it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easier, but it gives you a second route rather than these gatekeepers that are just like, you know, and some of them, they definitely help out. But a lot of times it's like, I don't even know what you guys want or what you're looking for. And half the time, y'all are wrong. Like, it's not like you guys are right. So it's just, it's a lot. It's like, if you know, doing it yourself with the social media, like, I definitely recommend, even if you're like a newer comic, like, it's not gonna hurt you. Cause like, all it's gonna do, I see these new guys come out and they have a couple jokes that do well. Some dude's got good numbers already. And it's just like, I mean, as long as you're not trying to headline when you're like 2 years in, like, it's not bad to have numbers. That's what all people like to even get booked on local shows. So it is funny how, like, yeah, like 15. I mean, the headliners from back when are, you know, it's funny to see them with Instagrams now, the ones that were telling us this was all stupid. Oh, this is a fad. I'm never going to do it. And then you start seeing them with me because everyone realizes, like, oh, yeah, like the power is, you know, if I have it, I can do so much more with it than just, you know, these clubs hopefully saying yes to me or, you know.
Yeah, it's funny too. You mentioned watching YouTube and then thinking, oh, I'm just sitting here watching YouTube. I should be making this. I always for a podcast, a visual medium is useful, but I keep this Kevin Smith picture at my desk because right when this came out, he put this in meals during the pandemic for his movies pop up. But the expression he's making, I always feel like is like, come on, man. And that's my terrible Smith impression. But right before the pandemic, he got his handprints with Jay Mews at the Chinese Theater, and talking to him afterwards, myself and another person, they were asking him about writer's block. And he was like, no, I know, I don't get, like, there's not so much writer's block as it is writer's laze. And he's like, I'll sit there and, be watching an episode of Succession being like, fuck, man, why can't I make that? Because I'm sitting there watching it. And so kept that picture here as him just being like, come on, man, like, are you watching it or are you writing it? And so it's always that, that pushing yourself forward, like you said, work is, we're both very much workaholics, and I don't know how to sit still. Like, I want to just keep making new things.
Yeah, I think that's good though, because it's also how, I don't know, I mean, to me, it keeps me not thinking too much and getting anxiety and like depression, because I'm just like, so my mind is always so invested in some project that I'm never really thinking too much about other stuff. But it's also just like, yeah, if I go on vacation after like 2 or 3 days, it's just like, all right, man, like, I need to be doing something. Like, I'm not saying like something crazy hard, but like, yeah, there's some people that just, you know, you need to be just moving. And I definitely feel like if I can guide that into positive work stuff, then, you know, because sometimes it is just doing dumb stuff that doesn't help at all in my career. But then it's like, oh, the days that I'm sitting down doing three different projects at once, when I get bored with one, I jump to the other, and then vice versa. Like, that, those are days I'm like, oh, I made a huge stride today. And if I could put more of those days back to back, that's how you become an elite just individual. And I do want to be someone that's more on the top level of a just using your max. Like, when I'm like at the end of my video game of life, and they show you like the attributes, like, oh, bro, you were on turbo like that whole time. Like, you barely let your turbo fill up, but you were constantly on. It's like, I want to see those stats where there's not a lot of lazy time, because we, you know, we get enough lazy time even when you work hard. That's the thing, is like, hey, I'll have a great, you know, hard working day, and it's like, I'm like sit in front of the computer for an hour. That's a long time. That's like up, you know, the day's only 24 and 8 of them sleeping. So someone said something great to me, not to me, on a podcast. I always feel like people are talking to me. But they were saying you have like 24 chips, like, if it's like poker in a day, each one's an hour, and you give 8 of them away right away for sleep. And then you think about like just randomly like getting ready for the day, organizing your house, your life. That's another like two. So you're down to like 14 of these chips. Like, if you think about it that way, like, when I'm in front of my computer for 2 hours just watching YouTube. It's like, dog, you gave two of your chips away. Like, you only have so many. And now you just, it's so not valuable what you just gambled on. It's like, I don't know. Like, I do think about, like, you only have so much time to think about stuff during the day. So when I think about even, I don't know, some buddies that are doing great around you and you're just like, oh man, should I be doing more? Should I be doing better? It's like, think about your project. Don't think about what they're doing. Like, right. If anything, they could be opening doors for you because of what they're doing. So, you know, it's you know, this whole thing being a comedian or entertainer or whatever, especially now, it's so weird. It does feel like the Wild West with, you can do it all yourself, but you can still do it through us, but you kind of need to be doing both. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it definitely prepares you though for whatever may come. And like you said, you know, you can't compare yourself to everybody around you, because if you spend so much time dwelling on what they're doing, you're doing nothing. And yeah, you're wasting those chips. And that's the worst thing that you can do on those days. And I don't know how was it for you when the pandemic hit? Because at that point, both of us had only been out here a few years, really. How did you find ways to make adjustments to being able to keep going during that? Because that I know, it kind of fucked me up a bit in like my way of even being able to process for a little bit there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, man. I booked my, you know, a lot of people were like, don't go on the road. I'm not doing any of that. Luckily I already had a lot of gigs booked, and it just worked out where, like, even when Washington opened, I already had something booked that weekend, and they closed like the next 3 weeks later. So I definitely tried to stay in like Arizona, Florida, like all these states that were allowing people to do stand up. Cause like I needed to, I mean, I was paying my bills that way. Like, yeah. I didn't have any income coming through. I didn't get any of the government. I got like one of the checks they gave people, but I didn't have a real job. So I wasn't getting these, you know, loans from everybody. So when, you know, I see a lot of my friends making more money than they made when they had jobs, I was the opposite. So I don't know, I just worked on the podcast studio a ton. Like, that was like, luckily that was like, we started in 2019. So right before like September of 2019. So it was like way, like the pandemic hit, and it would just gave us a lot of time to like tighten up everything, like make sure our back end is right, how legal we are is right. Like, it actually was a little bit of a blessing, because if we blew up right away and got big, we wouldn't have been able to handle that. So yeah. The time off we had was like specifically like, let's work really hard to make sure that this studio and everything is like kind of leak proof. And then, and we also another year in, we built Third Wheel Comedy, like the comedy club, like halfway through the pandemic, because no, like nobody was really allowing anyone to go up and stuff. So we just kind of opened a room that the idea was just like, all right, we'll get 10 people in here, kind of distant apart, and then we'll just all be telling jokes to each other. And then little by little, it turned into like an actual club. So the whole time I was just working, like, I mean, I hated it because I wanted the country to be open. It's more for like, you know, I'm not making any money. It was a struggle, but it was also, it did help me slow down, because I do feel like sometimes I was running a little fast with all my ideas, and it was like a forced, like, yeah, make sure everything is good, because when it does get good, it's going to be unbearable if the back end's all falling out on it. So
yeah, that's a really smart approach to it. I know podcast wise it was just like, oh, I don't know how to, like, my brain for some reason, even though I'd been using Zoom for years for work, never thought, hey, I can record podcasts over that. And then when everybody did start doing that, it's still like, at that point I was producing on my first movie, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, I'll get back to that after the movie. But if I did have to work like a full-time job while trying to produce a feature film, I never would have been able to really learn how to produce a feature film. And it's like, yeah, it was being able to kind of slow down. And even though certain aspects kind of got pushed aside for a bit, you're absolutely right. Having that chance to slow down and being able to learn, it definitely sets you up for being able to succeed moving forward.
Yeah, because I mean, I feel like a lot of times anyone can slow down, like, but it's hard to when everybody else is running around you. So yeah. When it's like, oh, everybody has to slow down. Okay, cool. Now let's see what we can do with this actual slowdown. That was the one thing I kind of enjoyed. Because it is hard to like right now I'm trying to do the same thing, like not take the year off, but like don't be on the road as much, like focus is more on like building my new, like, you know, writing new jokes, integrating them. Because after a couple of years, it's just like, you feel like I'm in like Groundhog's Day a little bit, especially when you go back to the same club and it's like, I'm doing half the same material, half new stuff I'm still figuring out. I'm so busy on just being out. I just know I'm getting tighter on stage, but am I getting funnier? So like, yeah, it is. I don't know. It was nice to like have a moment where everything stopped, so then you can reassess it, because it could be. It's been 7 years since we spoke on a pod. Like, time goes by quick. So that was a little bit of a good for everybody, good and bad, like of a, hey guys, like, let's recalibrate and make sure that we're doing what we should be doing. And it sucked for a minute because it was kind of a too long of a recalibration, but I mean, I definitely tried to make the best of it, and it ended up benefiting us pretty well.
Yeah, you've really done very well over the last several years, and it's been very fun to watch during this
thanks,
time.
Thanks, man.
It is crazy how much the time does just go by. And yeah, this is the first that we've really sat down to chat since 7 years ago. It's like, yeah, we'll comment something on Instagram or whatnot. Like, Billy, like, I've chatted to Billy a couple times through Instagram. But yeah, it's funny. You move out here, everybody kind of starts into their own things. And even though we all live within a few miles of each other, so I mean, Third Wheel is literally probably a mile from my place in Los Feliz, and it's like everything is so close. But then, yeah, it's a matter of reconnecting and finding that we're all just go. But it's fun to watch how everybody grows during that, and seeing you just hit the ground running out here, opening up your first podcast space and everything, and then seeing Third Wheel come along, and then now like. I've actually had people come up and they're like, oh yeah, I'm doing this club called Third Wheel. I'm like, oh yeah, I know Mike, who's one of the founders of that. And people are always like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, like it's put together by a bunch of great guys that made this awesome club. And I love seeing that people are talking about you guys as like a bigger comedy space now.
I appreciate that, because it's also, like that, people don't realize too how $0 that comedy club makes. Like, that is a labor of love. Like, I make my living off the podcast spaces that we have, and like everyone that works for that studio or the venue, it's like, we do it because we just love comedy. We want a free space for people. Like, you can't be paying to do comedy. Like, if I had to pay $5 to do stand-up, I would have never been a stand-up, because it's like, okay, I want to go up to at least once to twice a night, maybe three times. I can't afford even $100 a week comedy. Plus you buy a food or drinks to support the club. It's a lot, man. It's like, so when I, especially in LA and New York, where it's like the pay to play, and then they don't have audience there, is crazy. So yeah. Like we're definitely just trying to do more. Everything's free. It's more of like a community spot. We do want to open a real, like, our lease is up in a couple of years, and we want to open like at a real spot with like a restaurant and bar and stuff, and like try to compete with the real clubs. But it is just, from what we started, it was like such an accidental, like, we did not mean to build that place. It was an accident. Like, it was built like more for the podcast studio, and didn't end up really working for the studio. And then during COVID, when we were like looking at it, the room upstairs, which is now the green room, was supposed to be the space where everyone just sits down and shoots ideas. And we looked downstairs, and this giant space was going to be the studio. It's like, well, what, this feels like a venue. I called one of the other owners, Nolan, and I was like, hey man, I know it sounds crazy, but I feel like we were building a venue right now. And he's like, what do you mean? I sent them videos and pictures, and he's just like, oh, that's amazing. It does feel like that. And then I'm like, do you care if we convert this to a venue and maybe put the studio upstairs? And he said, yeah. So then we did that, and the studio upstairs didn't work. And then we ended up moving it to another location. And then now, just freestanding, we have this comedy club that was never meant to, honestly, like, never meant to even be there. Like, it was so crazy. So I do love how it started and the people that work there. Like, it's, yeah, the community of it's amazing. You can go up four times a night for free. Like, it's so awesome. I'm a big fan of, like, I went up to the improv. I love going to the improv and the comedy store and stuff. I don't get up like almost ever. So when I get bumped from there or just miss the side list, I just go to Third Wheel after to at least make sure I can get a set. Cause at the end of the day, it's cool to be working at these clubs, but I'm just trying to get funny and trying to get good. So I need to get reps in. And I feel like Third Wheel is an actual spot where you can get real reps in. Like, I see a lot of people there a lot, and they're getting a lot better. And like, people that, to me, I was like, oh, this person's new, terrible. And then 2 years later, they're comfortable on stage. They're telling decent jokes. And you're like, yeah, you're still only a 2 year in comic, but it's great that this place allows this growth that a lot of times in LA, it feels like there's no, you're just trying to go to the club so then they can see you and make it. And like, there's a lot of waiting around. There's less doing stand up. You know what I mean? Then
Right.
it's like networking for the most part. And that's like, I just want to be a good stand up. Like, no offense to people, but I can give a shit about hanging out at the club all night and like rubbing elbows and doing drugs and drinking until 3 in the morning and then being like, all right, cool. Hey, do you want to do my show next week? Like, I just
Yeah.
want to be a funny stand up. Here's my tape, book me. And I can get good at third wheel. You know what I mean? So I'm just trying to focus that. Definitely not ignore the other spots because LA's got a lot of great clubs. But I mean, no matter what, I need to get stage time. So that's more of what that place is for. And seeing so many people, like we have, I don't know, every night of the week we have different mics. Like last night, for instance, was a just a random regular open mic into a gay trans mic into a jump off show, which is just like typically more like the black show that we have run by Skylo and Marcel, which are so amazing. Like that's one of my favorite shows to even go to. So it's like funny to see from these, and everyone's like laughing, like, okay, from a gay trans show right to a black show, how's that gonna transition? And it's been the most fun. Like both shows are popping with completely different audiences, and we don't, and it's like everything booked there is not on purpose. It's like people message us, we give them calendar spots, and it's like we, I don't know, we end up having a really fun, diverse group just organically from just having a space that's open to everybody. As long as you're not an asshole, as long as you're not, you know, abused, like harmful to people, like even ver and no one talk, like don't be aggressive. We had a couple fights there, and then those people either got banned or they apologized, and they were always friends. That's the other thing. There's randomly a fight between people, two people that don't know each other. It's just you're in such tight quarters with your buddies. But I just, yeah, everything built there has been this organic, good feeling space, and it's hard not to go there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's amazing to me that it was kind of built up on accident, because you see the spot and you see the stage and everything you guys have set up, and to know that it was an accident and that you were looking down and like, hey, this is a venue, is just, it's so wild to me, because yeah, it is just a great spot, and I love the intimacy of it. I know when I first got out here and I worked at Meltdown, talking to a lot of comics, especially like really big comics, they loved doing Meltdown because of the intimacy. So because of the low ceiling and being able to just your feet from the stage, and it makes it such a unique spot where it's like, yeah, you can go to the improv, but it's kind of a bigger room. So depending on which room you're at the Comedy Store, it can be a bigger spot. And yeah, there was just nothing quite like Meltdown, and I think you guys have kind of brought that back around. With Third Wheel, being able to have more of an intimate show like that and let everybody find their voice there.
Yeah, thanks, man. I love, yeah, Meltdown was great. I used to love going there when it was open. That spot was so awesome. And yeah, honestly, like we definitely want a little bit of a bigger space, but our idea is that whole, yeah, intimate, like keeping, like letting everybody, if you're funny and you care about comedy, like it's like we, you know, open doors to you kind of thing. Like people come through, like some dude last night had no idea. He just heard about us and he was in through Atlanta. And they put him on the show and he was, or on the mic, and he was great. And like he stuck around for the next two mics. And he's like, I was gonna go to these other spots to check him out, but this, you know, I don't wanna go look for parking, do whatever, possibly not get up. If you guys have three back to back, this is great. And if they're all different, I can get a lot done. So, like, yeah, man, I definitely, it is, it for, yeah, I'm even surprised sometimes when I'm in there that, like, I always tell the guys, like, if this was by accident, imagine how dope it's gonna be on purpose. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
very
Like,
true.
what we can do thinking about what we're doing, you know?
Yeah, do those guys that pop in when they're in just from like some random place, they're just in town for business, and they pop up and they're so good, doesn't it just piss you off just a little? Because that used to happen all the time at Meltdown. Somebody would pop in, we had like a mic going on, and they'd be like, yeah, I just heard about this place. Can I just get up and do like 3 minutes? Like, and we'd always get them in, and they'd get up and just crush, and you're like, where the fuck did this come from? Like, you have everybody that's hustling, and this guy just pops
Yeah.
up and crushes it.
Well, it makes sense, because you figure if they're traveling and they're going to different cities for it, you know, typically, I mean, my buddy did tell me once, even bad comics have can buy plane tickets. So don't think that just because someone is, you know, going there, it's because they're funny. But
Good point.
for the most part, though, yeah, the people that are jumping around and going scene to scene for stand up and trying to get spots, at least. Typically, yeah, they are pretty fun. Usually, they're one of some of the better dudes in their scene, so it's kind of cool for us to see these people come through that are like, oh yeah, like I think you're hilarious, but you're probably the one of the funnier people out of your, you know, smaller city or smaller town. But yeah, it is a little, I mean, it is a little humbling sometimes because you realize there are, it's not just LA, it's not just New York. Like, there's beasts all over this country. And especially with like the social media stuff, you do not need to be in any of these big cities anymore to build a big following. You just need to be getting good stage time. You know what I mean? And so that's, in front of good audiences. And a lot of times, I kind of wish I grew up in more of a small town that I like to be in, because like that seems like it's not a terrible route, is just be the big fish in your city, get a ton of stage time, host, feature, headline these shows, whatever, and then put your stuff all online. I just enjoy LA a lot, just as a city itself. There's a lot of music, art stuff here. So, but yeah, it does feel like sometimes it's a harder route. It used to be harder to be in a small town. You have to be in these big cities. Now it's like kind of the opposite. Like, if you live in these small towns and you're kind of funny, like that dude that came through that you saw was probably getting every opportunity in
Oh,
his
yeah.
city. So that's why he's that good now, is because he got time quick, good time in front of good audiences. And for us, it's like, dude, I don't even remember the last time I had a good audience in LA. You know what I mean? So.
It's one of the unique things with LA too, is that you get a lot of audiences that are just tourists moving through, and you do anything even remotely talking about the city, and they're like, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm from Tennessee." it can be very humbling in those moments. You mentioned kind of where you were brought up and grew up. I know that was something we didn't really talk about a ton when you and Billy were on. And watching some of your Dry Bar special, I don't think I ever realized, like, I know you grew up back east before making the way to Seattle. Did not realize that both your parents were immigrants. I mean, tell me kind of that experience growing up back east, coming from an immigrant family, and how that kind of brought you to the point you're at now.
Oh yeah, so my dad's like 100% Italian, but he was a year, I guess like a year old when his family they went to Venezuela. So then he grew up there. That's where my mom was born. My mom grew up. My brother and sister were born in Venezuela. And then me and my younger sister, or we're the same, but like me and my other sister, we were born in like Florida, South Florida. So it's basically Latin America, you know what I mean? So it was an easy transition for my parents. And then my dad got a job in upstate New York, where was nothing like South America. So then it was my mom, my mom liked the seasons and the weather up there, but like seeing that. But yeah, it was just very, I looked very white. And especially like when I was growing up, I was more of like, I was getting tattooed and getting like, like leaning into piercings and like heavy metal and all that shit. So like people just assumed I was a super white guy. But I never felt it at all. Like honestly, other, like when I'm not looking in the mirror, I do just feel like this, like a Latin kid. Like everything, like I don't, like I'm like growing up, like I could feel the differences mostly when my parents were around. Because when I was just around, I just spoke regular, I did everything regular. I'd be at baseball practice and my dad would show up and all the parents would like make fun of his accent, like so nicely to him, but his name was like Jose, and they would like always say this stuff, whatever. And my mom was this like, quiet little white lady, and when she'd speak, her accent was like gnarly. Like even now, she's like mostly speaks Spanish, so it's like that. And it wasn't really, it's not New York City, so like no one really, they're like, what? So you're not Puerto Rican or Dominican, because there's like no Mexicans in the Northeast. That's like crazy how different. Like, but so they didn't really, it's like if you don't look like that, and then you speak English and Spanish, but you're white. I just, it was like, it wasn't like now when there's a ton of white Latinos I see, and especially when I put up these videos, like people will message me like, oh my God, I'm Mexican or I'm Honduran or whatever, and like look, and I'm like, I look like this. And so, but in the beginning growing up, it was shit. Like I did not want to be Spanish or Latino or anything. I didn't want to be even, like I was embarrassed about it. And then as I get older, I'm like, oh, I'm so happy that I am. I love the culture, and like it's, but it definitely wasn't awesome growing up like that, and it's in an area that people don't understand it. Like there was just mostly black and white in Albany where I'm from, so there was like no Asian population, a small Spanish population, but it was mostly, it was, yeah, it wasn't as diverse. So but yeah, then I moved to Seattle and stuff, and I started, I just wanted to connect with it more. And I never talked, my first 5 years in stand-up, I never talked about it. Like I talked about it here and there, maybe like year four, I was writing a couple jokes about it, but I was just so still not embarrassed about it, but still like I didn't realize how much I was disconnecting from it. But I loved it personally, but it was like this weird secret, like no one knows. And then as I started opening up, like after every show, I'd get all these Latin kids coming up to me and talking to me, because I would never say where I'm from on purpose, because I want them to ask. And I'd say my family's from Venezuela, and they would tell me where their family's from. And some guys would even ask me, "Are you from Venezuela?" Because of these certain words I use, which is like, that's my favorite. So like, as an adult more, it's like I love connecting with other Latin people and stuff. And I am like Latino, and I know like I grew up in America, so I'm definitely Americanized. But like last night, like my buddy had a bag of pork rinds, and I was like, bro, I've never had a pork rind in my life. That is such a funny, like, there's so many American things where I'll see or whatever, and like I'm like, oh, I just, that's like, especially food. I'm not, I didn't have mayo till I was like in high school. Like that, it was like, I didn't know. We just didn't have all these things, but it was weird when you look so generic white that people don't give you. Like, I'll be at restaurants out here still, and when I order in Spanish, they look at me a little bit weird, and then they'll sometimes even respond in English, and it's just like, oh, come on, man. Like, I'm just trying to still practice and keep it, but yeah, it does help my comedy a lot. I wish I started more with it, but it really just like connects more people to me. And also, I just tell stories about growing up, you know, the way I grew up and how it was a little different, and you know, other people relate. So that's definitely, I wish I started sooner with it, but I'm definitely really diving my whole culture and growing up and realizing more and more how different my, you know, coming up was.
Do you feel like, I mean, you were already doing well on stand up, but do you feel like once you started talking more about that in a way it kind of helped develop and find your voice a lot more than you already had?
Yeah, I feel like I was doing decent. I was doing, I feel like I was telling solid jokes, but I wasn't. Now I have a reason for people to like connect to me, because like there before it was like, oh, this person is funny, but I if there's something that resonates with somebody, they'll think about it a lot more. That I feel like that's when they'll actually go up to you, talk. Like after shows, I'd get people walk up and say, hey, you were really funny, or I like this certain joke, but then that was it. And then when I talk about the culture a little bit more, I mean, they're telling me stories about their life. So now it turns into like, instead of this quick interaction about, oh, I like that joke, it's like, oh my God, my family, I did this. Did you guys have that? And then we'll be talking sometimes like 20 minutes after a show. We're like, they'll stand to the side while I still do a meet and greet. And then after the show, I have a little group of like Latin people. We just have a conversation. So it did, I feel like, elevate even just my audience to this connection that I liked. It's real. It's not, oh, you're funny, cool, this is awesome. It's like, oh, I fuck with what you're putting out, and I want you to know that. And I'm gonna give you my time after the show to talk to you. It's like, that's pretty awesome. So I noticed that was a huge shift, and it's also helped me find, you know, like my voice too, of just finding out like the stuff that I feel like I was even so nervous to talk about growing up. I'm like finally talking about it, because like I'd always keep all these things sheltered, like the weird food that we would eat or the weird things my mom and dad would do. And now they're just funny to people. Like my mom, I snuck out one night and I came home, and my mom took my door off the hinge, like it was gone. And I didn't get it back till my birthday, like 6 months later. And I was like, I just lived without a door. And my mom had it chained to a pole in my basement, so I couldn't take the door. Like crazy shit, man. And it's like, I was always so embarrassed when I was a kid. I was embarrassed. Like, I don't have a door. This is wild. My friends come over, they'd be like, where's your door, bro? And it's like, now it doesn't. I'm glad my mom was crazy like that, because I got a, it's like, oh, I'm starting to write a joke about my, you know, these situations growing up. And then other people tell me about their career. And it's not even just Latin. It's a lot of immigrant parents and foreign parents, or you just, you know, if your parents are just wacky too, it just opens up a whole door when you give it a little bit more of a reality, you know?
See, I wish when I snuck out that my parents would have just chained my door up or something. The one time they caught me, I was trying to get back into my window, and as I got up to it, all of a sudden it was closed, and the light
Oof.
in my room turns on, and my parents open the window, and they're like,
Oh.
"If you want to be outside, you can be outside for the night." And
Oh
the window,
no.
and I was like, "What?" And I'm like a senior in high school, and had to, and like it was a little bit windy, it was a little cold, and so like I had to go, like we had this little divot like of like a back door into our garage that I like had to like huddle up in the corner and like try to go to sleep for the rest of the night before having to go to school the next morning. And it like I look at it now and I was like, I don't know why I needed to, like it was one of those like, hey, let's sneak out at night, like
Yeah.
we didn't do anything, we just wandered around the neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. We. That's a. Yeah. You just
Yeah,
wanted to be
I
out,
wish they
you
would
know?
have just taken my door away and let me at least come in and sleep.
Yeah.
But I love that you have found, a whole new sense of community and stuff with it. I remember when I worked in morning radio in Utah, we had Bill Bellamy come on the show. He was doing stand up in Salt Lake, and they're always, for people that don't know, when touring comics hit the road, if they're doing like morning shows or the morning news, there's always one of the local comics that's kind of hosting them and taking them around. And my buddy Jay, I don't know if you know Jay Whitaker. Sure, you guys have crossed paths. He had been opening for Bill during this, and he had brought him in that morning. And the advice that Bill Bellamy gave him, because he did tell him, he's like, "You're very funny. Like, you give a great show, but I don't know who you are." And that has always resonated with me, whether it was writing stand up or writing scripts or anything. Is who is this person? Who am I? What's the story I'm telling? And so I love that, like, where that has always stuck in my head of him saying, "You're great, you're great, you're funny, but who are you? Like, what is the story?" I love that you have found that of who you are and how you can tell that. And yeah, I mean, it explodes to build that community, and I think it's just such a unique, cool thing to be able to experience and see other people experience.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's been like even the way I'm writing now, I'm like trying in mind more of like staying in that pocket of like thinking about like just weird things. Like one of my newer jokes is like my dad's weird accent, and it's just like people. It just feels. It also feels like it's less try hard and more of this. Like I'm just sharing these things I grew up with, and you guys are connecting so much with them that I'm having fun sharing these with you guys. And yeah, it does feel more of like a community. And I as weird as that is, it is to find out whatever your lane is. It is a little important because then it helps you hone in your audience. And you know, that's the hardest thing about what we're doing is like, who is our audience? You know what I mean? Like, and we're trying to figure out who our audience is, you know, because sometimes we're throwing such a wide net that we're losing our legit audience because we're trying to get too many people that it's like just hone in your audience, focus on them. And you know, if these are the things that people are liking, I'm not saying just like stay writing that way, but you know, if I'm gonna sit down and write for a while, think of like really focus on the past, focus on growing up rather than just random things that could get a laugh but has no connection to anything. Like I used to tell all the Latin jokes at the end of my set when I started because they were really strong, and I realized that when I moved them to the front of my set, it made the rest of my jokes really strong because now they know, like you to your point, now they know who I am. Now they know the person that's telling these jokes later. In the beginning, even if they're a little bit hard around the edges or whatever, it's just like, who's this random person telling me this? But now it's like, oh, this is an immigrant kid who has, you know, is like he's first generation American. He grew up broke. He grew up like whatever. He was balding. He had all these issues. And then now I know who you are, where you're coming from. You love animals. You love whatever. And then when you start telling these little bit of like gnarlier jokes, even they're like, oh, well, they know the lens it's coming through. You know what I mean? Rather than they always see some. You know, especially being like a white dude, it always looks like an asshole, aggressive. Oh, you're just a mean guy. But then it's like, oh, well, you have sisters that are your best friends and you love dogs. You did that. It's like you talk about your past and if they know who you are, you get away with a lot more. So I did realize like, start with that. Like, let people know who you are before you start telling them what you think, you know?
Yeah, you disarm any prejudice immediately, and you build that trust within those first couple of minutes, and that it's something that you just can't buy. Like, that trust is so important. And as soon as you make them laugh at something that maybe was that prejudice in their head, you take any preconceived notions away, and they can just laugh then, and they can enjoy it. So, I mean, when I was doing stand up, I always would start off like being a little bit heavier of a guy, joking about the fact that I am a vegan, even though it looks like I ate three other vegans. And it would always immediately just disarm them of like, "Oh, so he knows he's fat. Okay." Like,
Yes, exactly. It's like if you don't talk about certain things, you don't let them know how you feel, like who you are, what you're cool with, what your humor is. Sometimes that they're so in their head, like, can we laugh? Can we not laugh? And it's like, oh no, this is what I'm telling you. Everything's cool, you know?
yeah, it's fun. It's fun if you've got an audience that you're very close up to, especially at a place like Third Wheel or Meltdown, and you can visually see that happen. Where you kind of watch them almost sit back and like, you come on stage and they got their arms crossed, like they're a little defensive. And as soon as you take that away, it's fun to kind of watch them like, oh, this is how it's gonna be. Okay. So now when you guys came on too, Billy at the time had just done his dry bar special. And we talked about all the unique fun of having to make sure that it kind of passed the sensors in a way with dry bar. What was your experience putting together your special? And I mean your special is so incredibly funny for anybody that that has not watched it yet. It's called Outside Cat. How did you come up with the title for one? But then just tell me the kind of the process that you went through of building the special.
Well, the title was, I just have a joke about an outside cat, but I also, it's like a double. Like, I always feel like I'm an outside cat. I'm always out wandering. I'm always like just going around doing my own thing, very solo, but then, back around and stuff. But it was mostly from one of my jokes. I wanted to set it. I probably go, a silly, fun title or something. Because they always just pick kind of random ones. But my experience, honestly, most of my jokes are clean. I just swear a lot. So a lot of it was, if you looked at, if I rewatch it now, I say I'm like so nervous before every joke. So I'm just trying not to swear. So every time, because I was like, I'm always underprepared. I barely like even when I got that, like I went up a lot, but I don't like re. I probably should have done more like focusing on what I was gonna do. I was just so nervous when I got it. I just was, my whole focus was, are these jokes funny? And am I not gonna swear? Rather than just like tightening them up a little bit more, perform. I wish I performed a little bit better. So if I did another one again, but it was very, it's just so hard to like, if you're organically, my joke isn't dirty, but I'll be like, so this fucking guy, he was fucking out of his fucking, you know what I mean? Like that, just shit, let me talk, like a human, like that with the whole time. I was like, oh my God. And then I said, oh my God. And I got in trouble for saying, oh my God. You know what I mean? It's like, Jesus Christ. I can't say anything. You know what I mean? Like,
And you couldn't say Jesus Christ either.
I couldn't say Jesus Christ. So yeah, that was the only thing that was pretty rough, is like, just fucking bleep me, dude. Like, but then their audience probably would have had an aneurysm if I was swearing and shit. So that was the only thing I didn't like, was just having to be so clean. 'Cause I'm like, jokes just aren't, I'm not like a dirty comic at
Yeah, you're not a
all.
dirty comic at all.
It's just, yeah, I just swear. And that was the nerve-wracking part for me. So I was thinking about maybe I possibly would do another one. I have a lot of new jokes that again aren't dirty, but it's like, and I feel like I, knowing the process now, I could know, I would know more on it, but I'm just so like, I just don't feel like that's me. And like the more I'm like, I don't know, I feel more loose when I can riff a little bit. And if I'm riffing, I'm probably gonna swear because I'm just talking loosely. And I don't want, it would just be like, if I don't know, I'm still like 50-50 on seeing if I would want to do another one or just produce something myself that's just, might not get as many eyes on it, but it's actually a more honest representation of me. Because it sucks when people come out to see you and they think you're a clean comic because of dry bar. And again, I'm not dirty, but when I swear or say bitches or say whatever, they just like start clutching their purse. Like, we got to get out of here. This isn't what I thought. And it's like, oh, I also don't want to bum people out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like, as much as people are like, oh, stand up should get, like, I'm a huge Patrice O'Neal fan. He's like my favorite comic of all time. And he's like, 50% should love you, 50% should hate you. And like, if I see people, even two people walk out, I would, it's like, I hate that shit. Like, I don't want to, even if we don't agree on anything in life and you came to my show by accident, I don't want you to leave upset. You know what I mean? Like, it's still, you took time out of your day to come check me out. You probably got a babysitter if you have kids. Like, a lot went into you being there that I don't, it sucks when they're not happy. So a part of me is like trying to shed that, of like, when I played music, we played death metal and we didn't give a shit. These are our songs. We play our songs. If you like us, you like us. But as a comic, for some reason, I don't have that same lens of just like, do what you do. And if people like you, they'll show up. It's like, I'll see people not liking me. I feel like, 'cause there's no songs, kind of like, these are the notes we have to play, I can kind of mold it a little bit. And sometimes that's not good because it's like, oh, you're probably losing true fans to make these people not as uncomfortable. Because certain jokes I have that do, they either do really, really good or really, really bad, I end up not doing them anymore. And I don't realize why. And it's like, oh, because when they do really bad, you're too afraid of losing those people when it's just really good, you're gaining people. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know, still battling that.
And with Dry Bars, for those that don't know, so it's filmed in Provo, Utah. So one of the whitest, most conservative places possibly on the planet
Yeah.
that
They don't even
ever.
have alcohol there. I went to buy champagne for me and my sister to celebrate after, and the city, not like the venue, the city doesn't have alcohol there. So it's
You
just like
could get some Martinellis, some nice sparkling cider.
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's
it's such a
crazy.
unique thing to experience, especially in comedy, and especially where you do riff so much. But at the same time, you mentioned how nervous you were in your performance. Watching the special, you would never guess that you were nervous or that
Oh, thanks,
your
man.
critique. You are very natural, and knowing just kind of some of your cadences, if there was any nerves or you were thinking, "Don't swear right here, don't swear right here," if anything, it gave you like the perfect pause that made jokes just land so beautifully. And yeah, you felt very natural, and it just seems throughout the whole special that you're just having a good time up there. So you would never guess that you were nervous going into that.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it was a trip, man. And it's funny, I did a Chris Frangiola recorded that night, and I remember watching him because I think he recorded one before, or he just did later in his career. He's been doing it forever. So I wish I got to go up after I saw his calmness, because like I went up, I did my straight. He's like, "Oh, it was really funny, man." And I'm watching this guy just not care, like not caring, like not an unprofessional way. Just like I cared too much about everything being like, this is my shirt doing it. This guy, they were like, "Hey, try, like, don't do anything that will change the consistency from the first video that we recorded." Two, they put them both together. Typically they'll just pick one. And this dude, in the beginning of his second show that he records, he just takes candy out of someone's in the front row. They're eating candies. He's making fun of them about it. Then he starts eating it, then he leaves it on the chair. And he like sits down on the seat.
The
He does something
continuity is going
completely
to be
different,
off.
100%. And he doesn't care. And he was just like, "Oh yeah, both shows were great. No one complained. He had a great set." And it's like, "Oh yeah, he just enjoyed being a comic. He had a real comedy set." And he even said, "Yeah, it's a good check, and they give you a tape." And it's like, man, I'm looking at it like this can change my life. And you're just like, yeah, they give you good money, they'll put you up or whatever. And then you get a good tape out of it. And then that's cool. You know, it was such a. I wish I had that mindset more than this can make or break me. It's like, just have fun. And when you have fun, that will transcend everything, because people notice it more. You feel bad. It's like when you're nervous, everything goes that way. When you have fun, everything goes that way. And that's what Third Wheel, honestly, not to bring it back to that, but it's like, I love like the feeling I get there. I have zero nerves going on stage. And then I'm trying, the more I'm going up other places now, I'm starting to care less. To where the nerves I would have at like the Improv or the Store or the Ice House is kind of like, oh, these are the same people that go to my club, go here, go there, go wherever. It's a different shape of an audience, but they're still the same kind of people. And just getting rid of that and just enjoying being a comic more than, I hope they all like me, because if they don't think I'm funny right now, I'm not funny. When you can have a bad set and still be hilarious. And then it just sucks when you go to different clubs, you're like, oh, no one here knows I'm funny yet. But so I like at Dry Bar, I wish I had that. Like Chris walked in with this, like, "I'm good. I'm confident that I'm funny. I know I'm gonna do good. And I'm just gonna be myself." And I was so new into comedy. I think I was only like 5 years in when that spec when I recorded or something. So I was like, just still figuring out that don't be such a try hard. If you have fun, that is, they'll like you more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very much just being able to have fun, I think, is one of the things that no matter what area of the industry you're in, people do tend to forget about. And I mean, both of us have the business mindset, so we're always thinking about, the business side of it. But when it does come down to the performance side, like I've heard Andy Richter say it on his podcast a number of times of like, you're as an actor, you're doing make believe, like just like don't take it so serious. You're playing make believe. Like get out there, have a good performance, and just do your thing. But I always will relate back even to some of the first things with like UCB that I had learned was that, I mean, their whole thing is don't think. Like stop thinking. Like if you're trying to think, you're trying to be funny, that's where you're going to bomb. And I even think before I had learned that, there were times early on, like in radio, where I would try to make a joke and it would fall so flat. And I would feel like such an idiot. And it was because I was trying too hard. trying to make
Oh,
sure
dude.
perfect. And then as soon as I was like, fuck this, like I can just have fun and riff and do whatever, and it makes going to set so much more fun. Like I'll just do whatever on a podcast, or it changed everything. Just be like, oh, I don't need to worry. I can just have fun.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I had the most embarrassing moment ever of trying too hard. Unreal. So when Jeff Ross was on tour roasting America, right? I think it was before I was a stand-up, or I might have been a year in it, or actually I think it was before. It was right before. So I was a huge comedy fan my whole life, but I wasn't like in the world, didn't know anything. I was still in the musicians world, right? So I show up, it's at the Neptune Theater in Seattle, huge theater, thousands of people. So it's kind of general admission. So once the doors open up, it goes by line. So I get like fourth row, middle. I'm like great positioning, right? So the show's going on, it's going great. I'm just watching it. And then he goes halfway through the show, hey guys, so now I'm gonna roast the audience. If you would like to be roasted, come on stage and I'll roast you. I don't pick on the people, you have to allow, right? First one out of my seat. I'm like third on stage. I'm so excited, right? So there's like 20 people on stage. There's a lot of people, right? So this dude, he's making fun of me. All you guys, fat girl, thin girl, you guys look like the number 10. Boom. And he's like hitting everybody, whatever. I had long hair like down on my shoulders and I had gauges and stuff. And he's like, and I just dressed regularly. He's like, you look like a broke pirate. I remember one of them. And it was really funny. And the whole time I was thinking, everyone else, after he makes fun of them, he interviews them a little bit and they get to say something, you know? So I'm gonna be able to say something. So I was so out of the moment just thinking about what am I gonna say, not what comes out when he asks me something organically. What it's let me be ready, let me think of something to say. So he came over to me, he asked me, he's like, whatever, what do you do? I'm like, I'm a pizza guy or some shit like that. And then he said something, and all I said was, and this is bro, sold out arena or like theater. I look at the crowd, and I'm like, smoke weed? Crickets. As quiet as that just was, crickets, bro. And this guy kind of like rolls his eyes at me and just like keeps going with the show. And I'm just like, what the fuck, bro? You could have just had an organic, real moment with this comic who you love. And instead, I tried to fucking drop a line that was gonna level the room, and it was smoke weed. Like, that's fucking, like, I'm in Seattle, and everyone was just kind of like, oh my God. So I just felt this, like, oh, I'm such a fucking jackass. And I knew they were filming that night for his tour thing, right? Cut to like a couple months later at Comedy Central, I see Jeff Ross roast America, and they start cutting the clip Seattle, and you see me on stage. So I'm just like, oh no, freaking out.
No.
So then they go to Seattle, they do a couple people, and then it jumps to another city. It's like, oh, thank God they skipped my whole part, right? My buddy, like 3 months later, calls me, dog, you dumbass. I just saw you on Jeff Ross Roast America. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's funny, right? You can see me on stage, but like, they didn't really show my part. And he goes, nah, bro, on the DVD, it's all uncut.
Oh.
So on his DVD extra, I bought the DVD, and you see my dumbass bombing, saying smoke weed. Like, bro, forever. It's on this motherfucker's only DVD he's got. It's like so embarrassing. And it was just such a try hard. I remember how hard I was thinking. And it's just like, man, just everybody else that he had great interactions with were just regular people. He was just having a real conversation. And my dumbass tries to go off script and just say something that's gonna, bro, I still think about that moment sometimes and it kills me because it's just so embarrassing. You know what I mean?
See, now you need to somehow monetize that note and have Billy use that as like the tag at the end of a Gateway show. It's just
They just show a pet video of me saying it next to Jeff
smoke
Ross and bombing, bro. Bombing.
weed.
Oh, it was so brutal, man. So brutal.
Oh, that is amazing. That might be the best one, especially that you thought you were in the clear, and then they're like, no,
Oh,
no.
yeah. Well, my friend said he saw me. I was like, oh, yeah. You could definitely see it was me on stage. But yeah, and the fact that on the extras, bro, they have everything unedited. You can see, I mean, if I ever do anything, hopefully, which I will, it's so funny where it's gonna be like, oh yeah, this is one of those moments of like, oh, Theo Von, when you make fun of him for being on Road Rules or something, it'd be like, oh, Mike literally bombed with Jeff Ross on theater, like in that theater. Like, I could, yeah, it was just so embarrassing. I hate that it's on like three angles professionally filmed one of my most embarrassing moments of my life. But
But I mean, now it makes for a good story though, and you're so far past that. Before we wrap up though, one of the reasons I wanted to have you back on as well is you recently put out a book, Comedy Is for Dummies. How did the book come about? And yeah, tell me a little of your process of deciding to write a book.
oh, thanks, dude. Honestly, I just, as silly as it is, it's just one of those, like, an idea of just, I see other comedy books. I always loved reading comedy books growing up. And I just, when I started writing it, I just wanted to write, like, oh, these are my experiences. I started like 3 years ago, and I had no kind of, I'd never written anything like that. I don't like read a lot of books. So I'm not like, I've only read mostly comedy books. So I just didn't know how to even do it. And I just wrote the first chapter about my experience. And literally when it ended, it kind of ended with me bombing. So then I wrote a chapter about what bombing was like. And when that ended, it kind of ended with me talking about, well, it wasn't that bad because all my comic friends were around. And the next chapter was comics. So it was like at the end of every chapter slowly started outlining itself. And I still didn't really have a direction totally for it, but I knew something was there. Like, all right, there's something here that I'm enjoying. This is going through. If anything, it was just for me a writing exercise. And then little by little, I started realizing, like, oh, there's not all the books I read, they don't tell you. It's either how to write a joke in like a corny, like whatever, vaudeville kind of thing, or it's like experiences and people's road stuff and whatever. It's like, but no one, like in mine, I like added, like, here's a booking email that I was told, like, this is what I sent. 'Cause so many people ask me, hey, when you send emails to bookers, like, what do you say? How do you send your email? So I literally in the book will have, I mean, exactly what I said, exactly what I wrote, my bio and everything. Like, I break it down. I like talk about, and then at the end of it's like it talks about the dry bar special, COVID comedy, working at comedy club. Like, I feel like I've touched on a little bit of all of that coming up through stand up. And it just kind of worked out where when I was as I was ending the book, it was my 10th year of doing stand up. So it ended up being like, all right, this is everything I learned in 10 years. And the whole kind of through line of the book that I ended up with is that I started doing stand up at 27, and that's like 27 club as a musician, especially growing up. Like, that's such a cool, like, oh man, you want to be dead by 27 with this amazing catalog, people, think about forever, and I'm just like, man. So I started at stand up at 27. And it's like you don't realize until you're older, like, how it's not cool that they died that young. It's cool that at that age, they have so much that we listen to, they have so much that they put out. And although I could never be there, it's like, start now. Like, don't think about, like, oh, I wish I did this before. Like, the book should have been done years before. It just took me forever to write it because I kept giving up on it. And then it's kind of like all these ideas where it's just like, I don't know, man, the best time to plant a tree is what, like 30 years ago, second best as today. And I'm just realizing that, like, oh yeah, like, and the book was finishing it, the kind of the through line was, this is everything I went through, everything I did, but it would have never happened if I didn't start. So nothing would have happened if I didn't start. And although I'm not, dead at 27 with this amazing catalog, I started stand up at 27, and that changed my life. And I hope to, my goal is to write another one in the next 10 years to hopefully update people on where the next decade I went. But it really is just that, like, breaking down a lot of what I learned, everything that I think would be valuable to other people, as well as kind of entertaining stories. And there's a lot of name drops, not for this the name dropping sense, but it's for people, they were important people on my journey that were like, they're necessary to throw their names in there. Because, like, even there's a story about Jimmy O Yang having a crazy sold out weekend in Comedy Underground in Seattle. And I was in the improv working the door one night. He had no idea I was there. He was behind me at the bar. I didn't know he was there. And I heard him say my name. And I was just like, did someone just say my fucking name? I turn around. It was Jimmy O Yang. And I was like, oh, what's up, Jimmy? And we only know each other from that one miserable weekend that he had. That was a sellout weekend. But it was such a crazy thing that happened. He was telling a story about it, and he brought my name up in the story. And you're just like, oh man. So I've told that story in the book, and it's like, I'm not using Jimmy O Yang to drop the name. It's more of like when you're coming up doing comedy, like, he was not even, he just got Silicon Valley when I met him. So it's like, and now you see where he's at even now. It's just, I also wanted to outline, these are where we all are now in this point of our career. So hopefully even in 10 years, when you read the book, it's like, when I bring up certain people in the book, it's like, wow, that person's killing it right now. Like Hans Kim, for instance, is like, we started together. That's like my guy. And now to see how good he's doing, it's like, he was on the first two comedy tours I've ever done. Like it was very like, yeah, that dude's very, it's just cool. And the book, to me, it's a little bit of a, this is all about me. But it's also, if you just like comedy, like the comedy world, you'll learn, I mean, everything about the back, behind the curtain kind of stuff in the comedy world. A lot of people don't like sharing. I just felt like, I don't know, if I know it, I'm going to throw it in the book. Like how to start a venue, how to start a comedy show, like what you should look for when you rent out spots, what, how much you should ask for. Just like all this information is in there as well. So I try to nail everything that kind of I haven't seen a lot of the book to do. And that was kind of my inspiration. And the comedy is for dummies. It's like, after knowing all this, I still want to do it. So I'm an idiot, because most of us, knowing how terrible and ridiculous it is, we still choose to do it. So.
Yeah, like you said early on in this, it's an addiction. But a good one. It's something that the highs you feel, whether it's comedy, whether it's likes on a video that you put up, any of those things, that immediate gratification does just kind of keep you on a high. And it keeps you going, even in those moments that you might bomb. I remember when I was doing stand-up, and you'd have those times where you're testing out new material, and it just is not good. Those would almost make me laugh even harder, because I was like, that sucked. Nobody liked how that went. Like, you can't dwell on it. You just got to keep going, and it's what makes it all worth it, and makes it fun. And like you said, start at 27. You look at like a Kurt Cobain and everything that Nirvana had by the time he passed away at 27, and all of that. Like, yeah, we can't compare that. You never know when your moment is to start. So I think it was Leslie Jones. I mean, she was almost 50 when she got Saturday Night Live. Like, you just never know when that's going to come around. You just have to put in the work and just go for it. So.
Yeah, man, 100%. And you'll meet a lot of cool people that inspire you along the way, that'll like motivate you, and just hopefully like that, a lot of, when you see people doing great things, I try to be more like inspired, because it's like when you watch someone land a kickflip, it's like, oh, that's possible. When you see someone land something, it's like, oh, that's possible, especially someone that you know. So it is, yeah, it's cool to, it, as much of an addiction as it is, it's also because you see this positive, it's like, it's not just like this little high, it's kind of this unknown, you know what I mean? Like, it's so, we're not like, you don't get paid financially necessarily. Sometimes you do. It's just with everything, with the opportunities you get, the people you meet, the just random, like my buddy Mike Eshak, he's in Dubai doing stand up right now, and we did a competition a couple years ago. I remember we were talking about our careers and how much, like, we were just trying to figure it out, and then 2 years later he's just shooting, killing it. And it's just like, oh man, like I love that. And it could be discouraging a little bit. It's like, man, we were at the same thing and doing the same thing, and now this dude's whatever. But it's like, nah man, he put in the work and he's doing great and he deserves it. And it just inspires me more to like keep putting in. Am I putting in as much work as he is? Definitely not in that field. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little spread thin with mine, but it's like, well, he should be getting that. So yeah, the addiction is, I like it though. I mean, especially when you can ring the bell a couple times, it definitely, it's worth it, you know?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I mean, I know both of us will keep going. There's
Yeah.
wind in sight. There's no stopping. For people to buy the book, they can get it on comedyisfordummies.com to pick
Yep.
up your book. Where else can people find you on social media if they want to give you a follow, or third wheel a follow to see the shows you guys are putting up?
You can follow me at Mike Mazzalotti, MikeMassilotti, or you can follow me. I do a podcast called True Crime Travel Map. It's a true crime pod. I don't know. I travel a lot, and I love going to true crime locations, like actual real ones. So I put a Google map together. It has over 600 real locations on it. So if you go to truecrimetravelmap.com, you can like find the map on Google. So if you're in Nevada, you can be like, oh, let me see what crazy true crime stuff happened here. It's on the map. It'll bring you there. I have also have a link to show you a story about what happened there. So when you're there, you can kind of research it and read about it. Just, I enjoy doing that. And I figured other people would dig it. And the pod's doing pretty well. Check us out on like YouTube and stuff like that. as well as Third Wheel Podcast Studio, Third Wheel Comedy. That's the comedy club and the podcast studio. And yeah, I mean, we have in person at the comedy club at Third Wheel Comedy. There's mics there every night, so I'm usually there working stuff out. If you're in LA, check it out. The podcast studio, we have two in LA, one in Seattle. So if you're in either of those cities, you can definitely use that. But yeah, I mean, just mostly, I appreciate if you get the book to see what it looks like. I'll sign the versions, and if you get it through the website, you put your name in it. I'll even write a little thank you on the inside of it. But yeah, that's it. I mean, that's where you can basically find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Again, I know how busy you are with everything you've got going, so I appreciate sitting back down and catching up after 7 years.
Oh yeah,
So
no problem,
yeah,
dude.
it's
This is
always a good
great.
time chatting with you.
Thanks. You too, man.
All right, we'll talk soon.